Sundays, 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
The only thing that keeps me alive, let me tell you right now, is number one, I'm right. Number two, I'm willing to die for what I believe in. Which means a lot of them are going to die if they come up here and try to kill me or arrest me, because I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air.
On infiltration instead of invasion. On subversion instead of elections. On intimidation instead of free choice. On guerrillas by night instead of armies by day.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations.
In God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists. Freedom and fear are at war. We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A new world order. When we are successful, we will be. Will be. We will be. We have a real chance at this new world order.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1, with me, your host, John Wick. There have been many words that have gone down in history that have a complete new meaning today, as these broadcasts will have an entirely new meaning in the future. Enter DEFCON 1.
Of the United States is freedom of speech. To the extent this country is actually exceptional, it's because we have the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights. We have freedom of conscience. We can say what we really think. There's no hate speech exception to that. Just because you hate what somebody else thinks, you cannot force that person to be quiet, because we're citizens, not slaves. But that right, that foundational right that makes this country what it is, that right from which all other rights flow, is going away at high speed in the face of censorship. Now, modern censorship bears no resemblance to previous censorship regimes in previous countries in previous eras. Our censorship is affected on the basis of fights against disinformation and malinformation. And the key thing to know about these is they're everywhere. And of course, they have no reference at all to whether what you're saying is true or not. In other words, you can say something that is factually accurate and consistent with your own conscience. And in previous versions of America, you had an absolute right to say those things. But because someone doesn't like them, or because they're inconvenient to whatever plan the people in power have, they can be denounced as disinformation, and you could be stripped of your right to express them, either in person or online. In fact, expressing these things can become a criminal act, and is. And it's important to know, by the way, that this is not just the private sector doing this. These efforts are being directed by the U.S. government, which you pay for and at least theoretically own. It's your government. But they're stripping your rights at very high speed. Most people understand this intuitively, but they don't know how it happens. How does censorship happen? What are the mechanics of it?
The United States of America is being invaded.
For the love of God, this is an invasion. Who is allowing this?
They invaded our privacy.
I think it's an invasion of the country.
No one is fighting back. Few are even acknowledging it. And the people who lead us are letting it happen. Why are our leaders letting this happen? Well, to destroy the country. And to change the demographics.
People are now, blue states are shifting them around, are paying millions of dollars to send them from Chicago to other places. It's obvious what's out there. The issue is who has the courage to step forward and say, okay, we have to have a program to stop this immediately, and we also have to have another program to basically get these people out of the country. We don't have a sovereign country.
Carlson contends that the invaders are waging a war against civilization, seeking to impoverish and besiege the nation, disrupt the energy supply, and usher in a worse system.
So they're waging war against civilization and society to make us poor, to put us under siege, and to cut off our energy, make the cost of living impossible, to break our old system, to bring in something even worse. And that's the Cloward and Piven strategy that the Democratic Party has adopted. They've done the same thing in Europe.
Who lives here determines what the country's like. This country is changing faster than you may understand. Americans are being replaced. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. In August of 2023, illegal immigration outpaced American births, a brand new population. Last year alone, over 3 million people came here illegally just over our southern border. The media won't tell you it's happening. But if you look around, you can see it, and you can see it most clearly in our cities, which are collapsing. The whole world that you occupied in, say, 2019, which wasn't that long ago, everybody's been either indicted, sent to jail, did some kind of plea, unable to find a job, has been bankrupted by civil suits. Like, everybody's been destroyed. Yes. No one on the left has been destroyed at all. They've all arrived.
But because Congress is apparently so offended that you will appear before a fake partisan committee.
Yeah.
They're sending you to prison. I mean, what's this really about?
That was never anybody's plan. I had nothing to do with that. I never went in the building. And they acknowledge that. They acknowledge that. And they still decided to come down heavy-handed on me. I might even believe it's at the very top of the DOJ. Maybe Merrick Garland is the one who's trying to put me behind bars and make an example out of me.
So Peter Navarro did not testify before that, quote, committee. What happened to him?
Well, Peter Navarro was just sentenced to 4 months in prison for that dastardly act, defying a congressional subpoena by the fake committee. Okay. So you would think in a functioning country where people had a commitment not just to party but to principle in living together peacefully, maybe for the next 100 years or so, people would be standing up for Peter Navarro.
Under Donald Trump, special interests like Big Pharma and the defense industry struggle to profit as his administration prioritizes serving the American people over corporate agendas.
Guess what? The special interests in Washington, whether it's Big Pharma or the industrial defense complex, whatever, they can't make money under Donald Trump. All right. They can do is do what he wants them to do, which is to serve the people. That's what it's about. It's about the weaponization of our injustice system to stop Trump from ever entering the West Wing again.
Ken Paxton is the Attorney General of the state of Texas and one of the primary checks against federal power. So far in the Biden administration, Paxton's office has filed 48 lawsuits against the administration. What happened to Hunter Biden? Well, he's still selling his childish artwork for hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece to Democratic donors who are reaping the benefits of that, you can be certain, that old donation to the Hunter Biden Lifestyle Fund. So that's Hunter Biden's experience of our justice system.
The three things that I think form what I call the iron triangle of MAGA, Make America Great Again, it's really, you know, the thing I was the spearhead of, the fair trade rather than simply sending our jobs off, sure, in the name of so-called free trade. It's the securing our borders, both for our economic and national security reasons, and it's an end to all these endless.
So you think that this, that the effort to remove you from office really came from the Biden administration?
I really do. I think that's where it was instigated. And then there were other groups in Texas that we can talk about that I think were largely participating.
Interesting. And some of those were Republicans.
So some of them were Republicans, yes.
Just in case you were a little confused about how the justice system works and who the laws apply to, last year, Hunter Biden blew off a congressional subpoena. Hunter Biden, the president's son, he decided he didn't want to testify before Congress, and he didn't have to. Then this year, January 2024, he showed up at a congressional hearing, but then a member of Congress appeared to speak, and Hunter Biden, as an expression of contempt for that member and for Congress itself, just walked out. Now, Peter Navarro, who was a college professor for years and not especially political, wound up in the Trump administration as a trade official, trying to narrow the trade gap between the United States and China. He got caught up, for reasons that were never clear, in the January 6th committee, the fake partisan committee run effectively by Cheney's daughter, that we now know did nothing to bring the truth to light about January 6th, but abetted a cover-up of what actually happened that day. And yes, it was a setup, and that's not a conspiracy theory. That's an obvious conclusion based on the now emerged facts.
So almost immediately after you're reelected to a third term, yes, they begin investigating.
Yes, but I don't know that. They start in March, is what they said, like March 1st. And they investigate secretly, behind closed doors, with no one knowing. Even the House Investigating Committee, not all of them knew. I know for sure that one of the Republicans had no idea until they got to that day that it was me. And he was told to vote for impeachment without knowing anything about the case and actually disagreeing with doing it. He was told his career would be affected if he didn't vote for impeachment. So those five members had an investigation for one day. They did a four-hour hearing, and within less than 48 hours from that, I was impeached on Saturday, Memorial weekend, without an opportunity to present my side, without an opportunity to have any sworn testimony, which is required by law. They are required to have witnesses sworn in under oath. No one was sworn in under oath. They didn't have witnesses. They brought in investigators who had talked to witnesses, which is obviously hearsay and wrong. So that's how it all got done. It was done in
less. And this was a total shock to you?
I had no idea. They didn't come talk to me. They told me nothing about it. They didn't tell anybody.
So what happens once it was announced you're being impeached? What happens to you?
It was horrible. I was immediately suspended, so I lost my office. I couldn't do any more lawsuits against Biden.
What do you mean you were suspended?
Suspended means I can't be in the office anymore. I can't direct what's going on in the office, even though I'm elected, even though they proved nothing, even though they had no testimony, no
evidence. You hadn't been convicted.
Hadn't been convicted. They had presented no evidence. They had presented no witnesses.
Behind closed doors, a secretive investigation unfolds, devoid of transparency and due process, targeting Trump supporters with impunity.
First of all, I could not support you more vehemently. Yeah. I think you're being railroaded for political reasons. I think it's very obvious to any reasonable person watching this, whether that person voted for Trump or not, or likes you or not.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're at the stage of regime collapse where constitutional precedents maybe are the operative question. I think it's about force, and they're trying to put you in prison because they don't like you, and they want to send a message to others that if Trump gets elected, don't serve that administration, you'll wind up like Peter Navarro, spending your 70s in jail. So my question to you is, and this has got to be obvious to you, if they, I think it's 57 or so days from now, they can put you in prison no matter what you say, whether it's appealed or not.
Yes.
If ordered to go to prison, why would you comply with that? Like, at a certain point, do you just say to yourself, this is all fake? It's not our system you're upholding. It's our system you're destroying, and I'm not going to participate in it.
I obey the law. I obey the law when I failed to respond to congressional subpoena, because the law, Tucker, for more than 50 years across Democrat and Republican presidencies, has been that senior White House officials like me, alter egos of the president, shall not and cannot and legally cannot be compelled to testify before Congress. They put me in leg irons. Leg irons.
Of course they did.
Tucker,
as they did to Roger Stone and a lot of other people that you worked with. Like, and that's kind of my question.
Yes.
Ken Paxton shares his harrowing experience of impeachment and exposes the hidden truths of the Texas House, obscured by the media.
It's a little odd considering that Congress is effectively a joke at this point. It doesn't exercise its oversight power. It really has no power. All the power in this country is now vested in the executive. Your position on you're the most hawkish Trump official on China? Is that what it's about? And what do you think the real story is here?
The real story here really goes back to 2016. I think you know this, Tucker, but I was one of the very few people who was with the president all the way from the 2016 campaign to the end of his first term. And I saw from the get-go the attempt basically to interfere with the election prior to the 2016 election by the Justice Department, the FBI, the Clinton campaign. And then throughout the term, I mean, it was just one thing after another where they tried to overthrow the Trump administration. Impeachment one, impeachment two, Russia hoax this, Russia hoax that. What it's about really is stopping Donald Trump from standing up for the American people.
How did you find out you were being impeached and what happened?
I literally had no idea. It was a committee meeting of the House Investigating Committee. I think it was 3 or 4 days before Memorial Weekend, the end of session. So they're busy trying to pass all these big bills, and they decide they're going to spend one day investigating me. Of course, they've done secret investigation for 3 months that we didn't know about, behind closed doors with no transparency, no due process.
He should do 4 years in prison. 4 years until he's... And when they told us that female leaders are going to be more compassionate and empathetic and kinder, a lot of them turned out to be bloodthirsty and punitive. Maybe we should reassess that assumption.
Hundreds of years of America eliminated by an invasion that our leaders made possible. You should know that. In other words, it's ending. The country you grew up in no longer exists. Soon it will be unrecognizable. Texas is changing really fast. It's dirty, for one thing, I noticed. Physically dirty, garbage on the side of the road. I never have seen that in Texas before.
And obviously, with, you know, Ann Coulter thinks, you know, she estimates there's 40 to 50 million illegal aliens here. Just there's, we know there's 9 or 10 just on Biden's watch.
The story of history is the story of invasions. One group of people moving into someone else's land and taking it. One nation ends, another begins. Invasions drive history. Few Americans understand this is happening to them right now.
Describing Chicago and parts of New York City as virtually uninhabitable, Carlson paints a bleak picture of the consequences of this ongoing invasion.
If you just even talk about the mathematics of that, they come after you for a great replacement theory. What's obvious, just common sense of what's going on, you just look around, and you look around in the great cities of the United States right now. I mean, Chicago is basically uninhabitable. New York City, Midtown, is virtually uninhabitable in many areas. San Diego Airport was taken over this weekend by, I don't know, 400 or 500 illegal aliens who were here, who kind of came in on asylum.
This is a plan. The central banks have unlimited money, but they can't buy all the infrastructure up because people aren't selling. So they've got to crush us and make people so poor that everybody's forced to sell their business, their intellectual property, their physical property.
The question of how and why the United Nations is the crux of the great conspiracy to destroy the sovereignty of the United States and the enslavement of the American people within a UN one world dictatorship is a complete and unknown mystery to the vast majority of the American people. The reason for this unawareness of the frightening danger to our country and to the entire free world is simple. The masterminds behind this great conspiracy have absolute control of all of our mass communications media, especially television, the radio, the press, and Hollywood. We all know that our State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House have brazenly proclaimed that they have the right and the power to manage the news, to tell us not the truth, but what they want us to believe. They have seized that power on orders from their masters of the great conspiracy. And the objective is to brainwash the people into accepting the phony peace bait to transform the United States into an enslaved unit of the United Nations One World Government. First of all, bear in mind that the so-called UN police action in Korea, fought by the United States, in which 150,000 of our sons were murdered and maimed, was part of the plot, just as the undeclared by Congress war in Vietnam, in which our sons are dying, is part of the plot, just as the plot against Rhodesia in South Africa, in which our sons will be dying, is part of the UN plot. However, the vitally important thing for all Americans, all you mothers of the boys who died in Korea and are now dying in Vietnam, to know is that our so-called leaders in Washington, whom we elected to safeguard our nation and our Constitution, are the betrayers, and that behind them are a comparatively small group of men whose sole objective is to enslave the whole world of humanity in their satanic plot of one world government. Now, in order to give you a very clear picture of this satanic plot, I will go back to its beginning, clear back in the middle of the 18th century, and name the men who put that plot into action, and then bring you down to the present, today's status of that plot. Now, as a matter of further intelligence, a term used by the FBI, let me clarify the meaning of the expression, "He is a liberal." The enemy, meaning the one world conspirators, have seized upon that word liberal as a cover-up for their activities. It sounds so innocent and so humanitarian to be liberal. Well, make sure that the person who calls himself a liberal or is described as a liberal is not in truth a red. Now then, this satanic plot was launched back in the 1760s when it first came into existence under the name of the Illuminati. This Illuminati was organized by one Adam Weishaupt, born a Jew, who was converted to Catholicism and became a Catholic priest. And then, at the behest of the then newly organized House of Rothschild, defected and organized the Illuminati. Naturally, the Rothschilds financed that operation. And every war since then, beginning with the French Revolution, has been promoted by the Illuminati, operating under various names and guises. I say under various names and guises because after the Illuminati was exposed and became too notorious, Weishaupt and his co-conspirators began to operate under various other names. In the United States, immediately after World War I, they set up what they called the Council on Foreign Relations, commonly referred to as the CFR. And this CFR is actually the Illuminati in the United States. And its hierarchy, the masterminds in control of the CFR, to a very great extent, are the descendants of the original Illuminati conspirators. But, to conceal that fact, most of them changed their original family names to American-sounding names. For example, the true name of the Dillons, Clarence and Douglas Dillon, once Secretary of the U.S. Treasury Department, is Lepowski. I'll come back to all this later. There is a similar establishment of the Illuminati in England, operating under the name of the British Institute of International Affairs. There are similar secret Illuminati organizations in France, Germany, and other nations operating under different names. And all these organizations, including the CFR, continuously set up numerous subsidiary or front organizations that are infiltrated into every phase of the various nations' affairs. But at all times, the operations of these organizations were and are masterminded and controlled by the internationalist bankers, who in turn were and are controlled by the Rothschilds. The details of how they accomplished the setting up of the CFR in the United States, as also in the other nations, are far too voluminous to be described in this dissertation. But you can find it complete in News Bulletin number 122, entitled UN is Spawn of the Illuminati, and News Bulletin number 123, entitled CFR Completely Unmasked as Illuminati. Both are published by the Cinema Educational Guild, Post Office Box 46205, Hollywood, California. You can get them for 50 cents per copy by writing to that address. Those news bulletins reveal the names of the original founders of the Illuminati and the Americanized names of their descendants in the present CFR. Now I'll go back to the activities of the original Illuminati conspirators. As revealed in News Bulletin number 122, one branch of the Rothschild family had financed Napoleon. Another branch of the Rothschilds, both branches, the real masterminds of the Illuminati, financed Britain, Germany, and the other nations in the Napoleonic Wars. Immediately after the Napoleonic Wars, the Illuminati assumed that all the nations were so destitute and so weary of wars that they'd be glad for any solution. So the Rothschild stooges set up what they called the Congress in Vienna. And at that meeting, they tried to create the first League of Nations, their first attempted one-world government. On the theory that all the crowned heads of European governments were so deeply in debt to them that they would, willingly or unwillingly, serve as their stooges. But the Tsar of Russia caught the stench of the plot and completely torpedoed it. The enraged Nathan Rothschild, then the head of that dynasty, vowed that someday he or his descendants would destroy the Tsar and his entire family. And his descendants did accomplish that very threat in 1917. At this point, bear in mind that the Illuminati was not set up to operate on a short-range basis. Normally, a conspirator of any type enters into a conspiracy with the expectation of achieving his objective during his own lifetime. But that was not the case with the Illuminati. True, they hoped to accomplish their objective during their lifetime. But, paraphrasing, the show must go on, the Illuminati operates on the very long-range basis. Whether it will take scores of years or even centuries, they have dedicated their descendants to keep the plot boiling until, they hope, the conspiracy is achieved. Now let's go back to the birth of the Illuminati. Adam Weishaupt was a Jesuit-trained professor of canon law, teaching in Ingolstadt University when he defected from Christianity to embrace the Luciferian conspiracy. It was in 1770... that the professional moneylenders, the then recently organized House of Rothschild, retained him to revise and modernize the age-old protocols of Zionism, which from the outset was designed to give the synagogue of Satan, so named by Jesus Christ, ultimate world domination, so they could impose the Luciferian ideology upon what would remain of the human race after the final social cataclysm by use of satanic despotism. Weishaupt completed his task May 1st, 1776. Now you know why May 1 is the great day with all communist nations to this very day. That was the day, May 1, 1776, that Weishaupt completed his plan and officially organized the Illuminati to put the plan into execution. That plan required the destruction of all existing governments and religions. That objective was to be reached by dividing the masses of people whom he, Weishaupt, termed Goyim, or human cattle, into opposing camps in ever-increasing numbers on political, social, economic, and other issues. The very conditions we have in our country today. The opposing sides were then to be armed and incidents provided which would cause them to fight and weaken themselves and gradually destroy national governments and religious institutions. Again, I say, the very conditions in the world today. And at this point, let me stress a prime feature of the Illuminati plans. When and if their blueprint for world control, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, is discovered and exposed, they would wipe all the Jews off the face of the earth in order to divert suspicions from themselves. If you think this is far-fetched, bear in mind that they permitted Hitler, a liberal socialist himself, who was financed by Krupp, Kennedy, the Warburgs, and the Rothschilds, to incinerate 600,000 Jews. Now, just why did the conspirators choose the word Illuminati for their satanic organization? Weishaupt himself said that the word is derived from Lucifer and means holders of the light, using the lie that his objective was to bring about a one-world government to enable those with mental ability to govern the world and prevent all wars in the future. In short, using the word peace on earth as his bait, exactly as that same bait, peace, was used by the 1945 conspirators to foist the United Nations on us, Weishaupt, financed, I repeat, by the Rothschilds, recruited some 2,000 paid followers. These included the most intelligent men in the fields of arts and letters, education, the sciences, finance, and industry. He then established lodges of the Grand Orient, Masonic lodges, to be their secret headquarters. And I again repeat that in all of this, he was acting under orders from the House of Rothschild. The main features of the Weishaupt plan of operation required his Illuminati to do the following things to help them to accomplish their purpose. Number one, use monetary and sex bribery to obtain control of men already in high places in the various levels of all governments and other fields of endeavor. Once influential persons had fallen for the lies, deceits, and temptations of the Illuminati, they were to be held in bondage by application of political and other forms of blackmail, threats of financial ruin, public exposure and physical harm, even death, to themselves and loved members of their families. Do you realize how many present top officials in our federal government in Washington are controlled in just that way by the CFR? Do you realize how many homosexuals in our State Department, the Pentagon, all federal agencies, even in the White House, are controlled that way? Number two, Illuminati on the faculties of colleges and universities were to cultivate students possessing exceptional mental ability, belonging to well-bred families with international leanings, and recommend them for special training in internationalism. Such training was to be provided by granting scholarships to those selected by the Illuminists. That gives you an idea what a Rhodes Scholarship means. It means indoctrination into accepting the idea that only a one-world government can put an end to recurring wars and strife. That's how the United Nations was sold to the American people. One of the most notable Rhodes Scholars we have in our country is Senator William J. Fulbright, sometimes referred to as Half-Bright. His entire voting record spells Illuminati. All such scholars were to be first persuaded and then convinced that men of special talent and brains have the right to rule those less gifted on the ground that the masses don't know what is best for them physically, mentally, and spiritually. In addition to the Rhodes and similar scholarships, today there are three special Illuminati schools located in Gordonstown in Scotland, Salem in Germany, and Anavrita in Greece. These three are known ones, but there are others that are kept undercover. Prince Philip, the husband of Britain's Queen Elizabeth, was educated at Gordonstown at the instigation of Lord Louis Mountbatten, his uncle, a Rothschild relative who became Britain's admiral of the fleet after World War II ended. Number three, all influential people trapped into coming under the control of the Illuminati, plus the students who had been specially educated and trained, were to be used as agents and placed behind the scenes of all governments as experts and specialists, so they would advise the top executives to adopt policies which would, in the long run, serve the secret plans of the Illuminati One World Conspiracy and bring about the destruction of the governments and religions they were elected or appointed to serve. Do you know how many such men operate in our government at this very time?
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind, peace and security, freedom, and the rule of law.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets, Tim, but one thing is not a secret. I disagree with this president's direction that he's taking the country. We can do a better job, and I intend to do it.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322?
An ally did not pay their dues. He'd encourage Russia to, quote, do whatever the hell they want. I guess I should clear my mind here a little bit and not say what I'm really thinking.
Well, good evening, folks. I really hope and I pray to Father Yahweh above that painted an extremely valuable painting in your frontal cortex for exactly what's taking place in these very days that we live in and reside in. Myron Fagan there, that speech by Myron Fagan, and I'm going to tell you what, that was just a very short excerpt out of this speech. That whole speech is 2.5 hours, almost 2 hours and 33 minutes, let's say. But no, I mean, you know, there are no conspiracies. Conspiracy theories are just, you know, some just in form of insanity that the mass amounts of people have just found to derive. You know, it's unbelievable, folks. I just, like I said, tonight's opening to this broadcast, yes, it was lengthy. I understand this. But I found it extremely extremely important that you should hear it. And Myron C. Fagan, as I was speaking of, he was born in 1887 and passed away in 1972. I'd say a man, full of information beyond his time, right? The very last clip there you heard, besides the, those who, belong to the secret societies, that don't exist because those are conspiracies. Well, that, you heard those folks there, the Bush, Bush, the Bushes, and John Kerry, right? The climate czar. and then you have that rambling, bambling fool named Joe Biden. And guess what? Joe Biden is America's biggest national security threat. At the end of President Donald Trump's administration, there was peace abroad and prosperity at home. After 3 years of President Joe Biden, Americans no longer enjoy economic prosperity, but face inflation and high interest rates. Also, major wars are raging in Ukraine and in Gaza, while additional wars may be started by the brutal dictators in China and Venezuela. The banking cartels are behind all of those, right? Isn't that what you just learned? If you were totally and full-on unaware of it? And not only that, but you have the Zionist faction, and those dirty goyim out there, them, the human cattle, or chattel, if that's what we'll call them. Look, we're in big trouble. Country's in big trouble. And if you pay attention to anything else other at all whatsoever than this broadcast tonight, well then, that's fine, but you need to get this out there and get it reshared. And at the end of tonight's broadcast, I will put that clip there. Was it that 2.5 hour speech by Myron C. Fagan in the Element chat? To make matters worse, Iran is on the threshold of obtaining nuclear weapons, and the North Korean dictator is threatening to launch a military invasion against his neighbors, right? South Korea. In Jordan, 3 American military service members were killed and dozens were wounded in a drone attack launched by Iranian proxies. I don't think it mentions it here, but let me just, reiterate it. And then we had, 13 soldiers that were blown to bits there in our absolutely ridiculously massive retreat from Afghanistan. But overall, since the Hamas terrorist attack against Israel on October 7th of 2023, which is full on, you know what that is? You don't think the Israelis didn't know about that? It was brought on. It was put on by the Israelis themselves. It's the same damn thing that happened here in the United States during 9/11 in 2001. Or the same modus of operandi, okay? American military personnel and facilities have been attacked 166 times by drones, missiles, or rockets launched by Iranian-funded militias. Well, you know what? I say we get our troops the hell out of there. During the same period, the Houthis, Yemeni terrorists backed by Iran, have attacked ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden at least 36 times. The Houthis claim their involvement is to show solidarity with Palestinians in the war between Israel and Hamas. What was that about the Zionists wiping out Israel or the Israelis? You think that might be part of the plan still to this day? Well, the Biden administration has militarily responded to some of these attacks by striking facilities linked to Iranian proxies in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. It will not deter these terrorists. The best way to prevent future attacks is to target Iran economically or militarily, sending a message to the world's largest benefactor of terrorism. Right. Yeah. I'm sure. How many terroristic acts has the United States committed on numerous other countries, especially under declared wars that weren't even declared under Congress, kind of like what's going on right now? But this course of action has been dismissed by the Biden administration, which has eased economic sanctions on Iran, reducing the pressure that was exerted by President Trump. During his presidency, Iran was contained, and so were their terrorist proxies. Well, what was it? Biden gave them back their $6 billion of freezed assets, wasn't it? Unfortunately, the Biden administration has allowed Iran to become emboldened and enriched. As a result, additional resources have been provided to terror groups such as Hamas. Without Iran's funding, Hamas would have been unable to launch their attack against Israel. While Trump was president, instead of military conflict and terrorism in the region, there were four significant peace agreements between Arab nations and Israel. These noteworthy pacts were known as the Abraham Accords and marked a major accomplishment for President Trump. Regrettably, the Abraham Accords are a distant memory today as the region is engulfed in chaos, which has been caused by Biden's feckless domestic and foreign policies. His embarrassing withdrawal from Afghanistan, oh, it did mention it, resulted in the death of, that's right, 13 military service members, but also encouraged Russian President Vladimir Putin to invade Ukraine. In contrast, Putin did not invade any countries while Trump was president. You know, and I want to just state for the fact of it all, That airbase up there, was it there in, for the love of God, I can't think of it for the life of me right now, that the main military base there in Afghanistan, you know where I'm talking about. You know who that was given to, by the way? Or who moved right in after we moved right out? Yes, you guessed it. None other than China itself. Now moving on, Trump believes in peace through strength, the philosophy shared by President Ronald Reagan. Both presidents restored our military strength. However, Biden has weakened our military by his appointment of woke leaders who have pursued policies that target white rage and promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. You can't make this shit up. Excuse the language. These policies led to a massive decline in recruitment at all military branches. Thus, at a time of heightened threat, the United States is ill-equipped to deal with these challenges due to misguided Biden policies. Well, I mean, hell, we're even disarmed, right? We sent everything over there to Eastern Europe. Well, and, you know, and then whatever else we have left, we're sending over to Israel. Our foremost threat, Communist China, has been treated with kid gloves by Biden. Well, of course, you know, Biden's a CCP agent with his son. Or they're under blackmail from the Communist Chinese Party, you know, hence the CCP. Leading many to believe he is compromised in his dealings with this adversary. In response to the Chinese sending a spy balloon over our country, Biden did nothing. I don't think it was a Chinese spy balloon, honestly, but, you know, I've been, reporting a lot about the balloons way before any balloon incidents ever happened. Raven Aerostar, T-Com Holdings, and such. If you think I'm full of it, you know, just go look up what I'm broadcasting to you. Currently, China is using our open border to send large numbers of military-age men into our country. This would not be happening if Biden had retained Trump's strong border policies. Unfortunately, Biden stopped construction on the border wall and encouraged migrants from around the world to enter the United States. Millions of undocumented migrants accepted migrants. Get out of here. Invaders accepted Biden's offer and have flooded our country. Among this invasion of influx are an untold number of criminals and terrorists. It is widely suspected that terrorist sleeper cells have been established in at least the 3 years as President Biden has allowed an open border to threaten the lives of every single American here in this nation. This dangerous threat to our nation may not be fully understood by Biden. As the nation witnessed last week, Biden is mentally incompetent. Speaking of this, the incompetency, I saw a report over there on the Drudge Report, right, which is just absolutely nonsensical bullshit, saying that, well, Donald Trump is showing more decline than Joe Biden is. You can't make this up. Look, if you buy any of the narrative that any of the bullshit mainstream media sells you, you are being led astray. I assure you this. I assure you. Here, I'm going to tell you what. You're going to get the unequivocal truth. No biasness, no bullshit. You know, what is really happening and why it's happening for how it's happening to reach their end goal, right? And what is their end goal? Oh, that's right. I forgot. It's a new world order. You know, that conspiracy theory. In a primetime news conference, he mixed up the nations of Egypt and Mexico. Earlier in the week, he forgot the name of the Hamas terrorist and mistakenly believed he met with the late presidents of France and Germany. This is Biden we're speaking of. The damn new special counsel report on his mishandling of classified documents should have resulted in criminal charges. Well, if it was Donald Trump, by God, they'd be raking him over the coals, wouldn't they? Instead, the special counsel said that Biden was too mentally frail to withstand a trial and that jurors would feel sympathy for an elderly man. In his meetings with Biden, the special counsel noted Biden forgot when his son died and when he served as vice president. He characterized Biden's answers to questions as painfully slow. Well, you just heard that last clip I ran for you. And that was one of his most recent public announcements, right? According to a recent NBC News poll, 76% of Americans are concerned about Biden's age. They are correct. Biden is mentally incompetent and should be removed as president via the 25th Amendment or impeachment. At the very least, every congressional Republican should demand Biden submit to a mental competency test. Of course, he will refuse the test because he will fail. Due to his condition, he is not conducting many news conferences or public events. Some supporters, such as commentator Van Jones, are recommending that he stay hidden. Right? Hidden? Did you hear that? He stay hidden during the upcoming campaign. His policies and mental incompetence make Joe Biden America's biggest national security threat. In his deteriorated mental state, he cannot serve as commander-in-chief or have access to our nuclear codes. Well, he doesn't. And as far as I've been aware, for the past 4 years, they've been locked up as tight as a bug in, you know what, in Cheyenne Mountain. For example, his provocative stance against the Russians may lead to a nuclear conflict, resulting in world annihilation. Is Biden staunchly supporting Ukraine because he is compromised? He did force a Ukrainian prosecutor who was investigating his son's corrupt dealings to be fired. And we've played that audio clip here many, many times. Biden's corruption will eventually be exposed. In the meantime, if he continues as president, Americans are in extreme danger. Congressional Democrats must join Republicans and demand Biden's resignation, if not impeachment, or the 25th Amendment procedure must commence immediately. Well, I'm going to tell you what. That's a fact. But this is all meant to have happened. And it's Joe Biden that's not even running the country. You know who's running the country, don't you? It's a guy by the name of Barry Satoro, who's married to a transvestite named Mike. And these two people were the former sitting president before Donald John Trump. Okay? Barack and Michelle Obama. Folks, look. If we don't get ahead of this, we're going to suffer greatly. And we are already suffering greatly. And look, we've got to call everything as it is, right? Because the whole reason we're in the predicament that we are in is because nobody has cared to stand up and call it out exactly for what it is. And it sure as hell is not some conspiracy. Okay? So I'm reading this here. I mean, this comes from RT, just real quick. What says, at the top of their ticker here, it says, Tiedemann city of Avdiivka is liberated, says Moscow. Well, the Russians continue to push forward, don't they? In Avdiivka. Make no mistake, a new civil war is a very real prospect for the U.S. It has long been on the minds of doomsday preppers and fiction media creators alike. But how likely is it, really? Well, let's see what this says. It says, let's sketch a big country in three broad strokes. First, its population is over 333 million. These citizens privately known about, or, well, excuse me, privately own about, or at least, 339 million guns. They are unique in that no other state in the world has more private guns than people. They easily outdistance, for instance, Yemen, a country with a martial culture that has gone through years of civil war, and yet there are only about 53 firearms per 100 inhabitants. Second, polarization is unusually high in Berlin as of 2020 already, A political scientist at one of America's most prestigious universities found that political polarization among Americans has grown rapidly in the last 40 years, more than in Canada. I'm going to tell you, Canada, you guys got some problems too. I saw some kind of a talk show, kind of like a Family Feud kind of thing. And you had three gay lovers. One of the gay lovers' previous wives, and then you can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. Is anybody else just as, you know, asking what the hell has happened? Why is everything upside down? Well, because it's meant to have happened. I mean, that short snippet there of that speech there in the beginning pretty much painted it all out. I mean, honestly, I should have just ran them audio clips that I played and then just quit the broadcast. Because that right there painted a big enough picture. But I've got a duty here, and I've got an obligation to God himself to give you this information. Yeah, more than in Canada. The United Kingdom, Australia, or Germany, for instance. Result, America is special, but not in a good way. None of the wealthy, consolidated democracies of East Asia, Oceania, or Western Europe. A 2022 paper published by the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace pointed out, have faced similar levels of polarization for such an extended period. Last year, another Carnegie Endowment paper found that even while some of the perception of polarization on specific policy questions, such as gun control or abortion, is exaggerated, that perception itself is detrimental to the country's cohesion, because the people who are most involved in civic and political life hold the least accurate. Here meaning highly negative views of the other side's beliefs, and there is a high degree of what political scientists call effective polarization. Put simply, excuse me, all or many of those citizens collectively hoarding so many guns that over 40% of households are armed in one way or the other do not like or even merely respect the other side of the political spectrum. Not at all, and ever less. Even less. Ever or even less. Well, you get it, right? Same difference. Third, the country also displays a pronounced cultural preoccupation. You think? Really almost obsession, not merely with the idea of civil war as such, or the specific history of its own very bloody civil war in the 19th century. Rather, its elites and general population are fixated on a coming civil war, which as of 2022, a whopping 43% considered likely in the next 10 years. Debates, highbrow books, articles, and popular culture feature this fantasy prominently and persistently. Well, you mean to tell you what it is, if they're not going to mention it here? It's called predictive programming. We are talking, of course, about the United States of America. While it would be easy to adduce more criteria and data points, there is no need. The above is sufficient to demonstrate that it would be short-sighted to poo-poo the risk of a second civil war in America for two reasons. It is not a mere fantasy, owing its current national resonance to hype and the titillation of imagining a liberatingly apocalyptic future of chaos in every man and woman for themselves. And in the U.S., I guess, every other gender that wishes to participate. Right? Well, I'm going to tell you what. Obviously, the Russian news agencies have got their shit together, don't they? Kind of about like they've got their military together, too. Just saying, look, I'm speaking the truth here. Smart Americans realize this as well. Barbara F. Walter, for instance, is a prominent political scientist who has worked extensively with the CIA to develop a model of civil war predictors for any country but the U.S., of course. She has now come to the warn that the model begins to fit America itself disturbingly well. She may have her centrist biases, the usual exaggeration of Russian influence included, but her core points are valid. The U.S. is turning into an anocracy. That is, in essence, a regime that only pretends to be a democracy. In fact, that is what it has always been, I would contend. And there is a substantial constituency of those who feel threatened by losing their former social status and preeminence. Those happen to be phenomena strongly correlated with a risk of civil war. Says, let's also not forget that America is proving its enormous capacity for global disruption every day, even without civil war at home. While some observers may even gleefully hope that Americans fighting each other would finally have to let go of the rest of us. That is a very dicey bet. With an elite narcissistically obsessed with global primacy and, well, primacy, right? That'd be it. Primacy and indispensability, about 800 bases worldwide, an arsenal of thousands of nuclear warheads, and a nasty habit of blaming others for its own failures, a new American Civil War would not exclude aggression abroad. Moreover, declining as it is, the U.S. is still a key part of the global economy, much more than in 1860, when its first Civil War already had serious repercussions for the rest of the world. In sum, it may attract preppers with camo baseball hats, beards, and pump guns, all right, shotguns, but don't let that fool you. American Civil War 2.0 is a serious issue. So what about it? It says here, what about it? What can we reasonably guess about how likely it really is and what shape it might take if it happens? To start with the latter question, perhaps the first thing to note is that the big civil wars can start small and local. That is, by the way, the real significance of the recent open tensions over migration, or, you know, here, I'm going to straighten out the article here, invasion, and border control between the state of Texas and the federal government in Washington. They did involve armed forces and much foreboding rhetoric, but fortunately, no shots were fired. Yet those glibly dismissing the incident as mere political theater are wrong, because as the New York Times has noted, it was not only Texas that defied the U.S. government. Rather, many Republican states' leaders publicly expressed defiance in terms that echoed armed conflicts. Indeed, the second thing to note is that due to America's federal structure, a new civil war would likely begin with secession. In the fracas between Washington and Texas, 25 Republican governors openly sided with rebellious Texas. Righteously. Upholding their state constitution. Not only that, trying to protect their people from an ongoing invasion. You know, I have to straighten some of this out. You know, not everybody's going to get it all right. Since this was a perfect illustration of how one local flashpoint could quickly suck in the rest of the country by creating a logic of ultimate polarization and then secession. This logic is not yet fully unfolded. Its contours, however, have emerged clearly. It's worth noting that many of the fiction narratives about Civil War 2.0 make the same point. Whether it is the cult graphic novel series DMZ, the bitterly ironic novel American War, it's obvious and joke is that it has some Americans treat other Americans the way Americans and Israelis now treat Palestinians, Iraqis, or Syrians, the small-budget yet clever movie Bushwick, or the big-budget Civil War about to hit American cinemas now. Again and again, the basic premises is a scenario of secession escalating into massive domestic warfare. Folks, I'm going to tell you what. If you aren't aware and if you haven't been paying attention and seeing what's going on here over the past, let's say, just 10 years, this country is being set up as a kill box, okay? And I don't want anything like that to happen. That's why I'm trying, you know, like I said, we got to get ahead of all of this and stop this insanity so such things don't happen. In the same process, take care of those who have committed Like I said, Biden's rubbing off on me. Get out of here. And I even lost my spot, just like he does. Imagine that. I'll pick it back up here in a bit. Third, while the humongous pile of private firearms would certainly play a large role in a new civil war, it would be misguided to assume that such a fight would only pit gangs of private citizens organized in militias against official police and military forces. In reality, a dynamic of secession, once set in motion, would lead to parts of the U.S.'s main fold, Siloviki, whatever that is, choosing their own allegiance, splitting and starting to fight each other. If you believe that in such a situation, the formal chains of command ultimately linking them all back to Washington would remain intact. Well, I mean, of course, that's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to do. While these bastards hide in their underground redoubts. You know, like Mark Zuckerberg is building right now. Once set in motion would lead to parts of the U.S.'s main fold, Siloviki. Starting to fight each other. If you believe that in such a situation, the formal chains of command ultimately linking them back to Washington would remain intact. I have a whole and indivisible Yugoslavia to sell you. last but not least in such a development, the war would be both severe and long. In the respect, it would resemble the first Civil War. Although due to the advanced technologies and declining inhibitions, it would be even more devastating and cruel. I mean, what, like using drones? In Netflix's recent and tellingly successful Leave the World Behind, get out of here, that's bullshit. Telling and successful. No. The protagonists never learn who exactly is blowing up their country. But by the end of the movie, two things seem reasonably clear. No, it's not enemies from outside, but an inside job, and nukes are being used. That, by the way, was the premises as well of the earlier, initially unsuccessful, but now cult television show, Jericho. I'll tell you what, I would not know. I don't watch any of that mind-numbing nonsense. Okay? Says here, how likely is such a dark future? Well, obviously, we do not know. But let's note two things. We could, a priori, be, or prior, whatever, AI-written thing, probably, be looking at an America where no one is such interested in thinking about it. Yet, we are seeing the opposite. If you think that means nothing, well, fine. Just don't mistake your guess for a good policy or planning basis. There are, of course, alternatives to civil war. One is peaceful depolarization under the current autocratic conditions, which hypothetically can happen. The other is full-blown authoritarianism. One way to suppress the possibility of a civil war is to, well, what are they doing? Impose a dictatorship? Is that what it is? And here's the catch. A country can end up with both civil war and dictatorship. Ask the ancient Romans. Those Romans, that is, who were so much of the mind of the founders of the American Republic, or were on the mind of the founders of the American Republic. Well, and that kind of falls in with, what was it, last weekend's broadcast, doesn't it? No collapse. So, let's kind of shift gears from a civil war to a second revolution. The coming conflict in America won't be a second civil war. It'll be a second revolutionary war. I had to take a drink. Since there have been new murmurs for at least the last 10 years about the potential for civil war in the United States, polls have shown that roughly half the country believes that future conflict is likely. The intrusion of unchecked government power into every crevice of our private lives has transformed politics into a high-stakes cage match in which furious citizens fight to survive. Because government exerts so much control over citizens, winning control of government has become an existential imperative. Such zero-sum thinking has fractured society and pitted Americans against one another. Well, what is that? That Clarida Piven? Jones mentions there a while ago. However, something fundamental has been shifting beneath our feet. If you look at how civil conflict has been discussed on websites and internet forums over recent years, a noticeable trend emerges. Talks of civil war between various coalitions of states transformed into calls for independence from tyrannical government on par with America's 1776 founding. In turn, calls for an American-style revolution against government abuse have transformed into the kind of rage against a permanent ruling class that existed before the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror. This shift is significant. Civil War connotes a feeling that Americans will be fighting one another. A 1776-style struggle for independence reflects a belief that the federal government must be brought to heel. Widespread discussions of how to rid the country of an uncontrollable bureaucracy with more than allegiance to fellow globalists from the World Economic Forum than to fellow citizens from America's heartland reveal a growing recognition of the antipathy for an entrenched ruling aristocracy. Governments don't mind when citizens quarrel. In fact, the old divide-and-conquer scheme in Washington's is Washington's favorite tactic for keeping Americans too busy fighting one another to notice what kind of mischief is going on in D.C. governments. On D.C., yeah, governments would prefer that citizens not speak about freedom or liberty because those ideas are antithetical to bureaucratic mandates, institutional power grabs, and rhetorical appeals to authority. Still, so long as an Orwellian news media establishment and a Machiavellian political class can work together in impunity, liberty as selfish or hateful, then the powers that be largely succeed in twisting the meaning of freedom into a love for big government policies or a patriotic subservience to the state. Right? Toe the line. However, when ordinary people begin to set aside their differences and instead turn their fury toward those holding the reins of power, well, Katie barred the door. Trouble's brewing. There is an understandable tendency to look at the growth of government, directed censorship, warrantless surveillance, and political persecution as proof that Americans will soon be under the yoke of full-fledged totalitarianism. Well, I call it a technocracy, but, that's a big part of it. That is a real and threatening possibility. However, petulant and steel-booted policies meant to terrorize and dishearten citizens also reflect a growing fear among the ruling elite. You do not spend 3 years hunting down patriotic grandmas and selfless veterans who attended the J6 protest for free and fair elections unless you are terrified that a critical mass of people sees rampant election fraud as a uniparty weapon for maintaining illegitimate control. Now, I know it's not going to mention this here, so I'm going to mention it. All these soldiers that came back with PTSD, all these combat zones and so on and so forth, you know what that was likely caused from? A vaccination. You know why? Well, because the federal government over there in D.C., the District of Criminals, they don't want any veterans to be able to form a standing army against their, well, what is it? Dictatorial rule. So therefore, all you soldiers that were shot up, you know, injected with God only knows what, because I'm one of them. Here I am with a, you know, failing heart and dying kidneys. a lot of you were given stuff so that you wouldn't be able to form a standing army against this here corrupt, government, if for lack of better terms. Says you do not set up disinformation review boards or pretend public debate is a threat to national security unless you are frightened of what ordinary people have to say. You do not spy on people's financial transactions, text messages, and social media posts unless you view every single American as a danger to the state. Rapid technological advancements have given government authorities unsavory tools for pursuing unconstitutional, illegal, and immoral policies against the American people. But those authorities would not be so openly hostile to the public or flagrantly dismissive of their unconstitutional obligations if they were not already afraid. Well, what is it? Yeah, they should be. The single greatest social transformation in several centuries is occurring right now. A transnational consensus is growing among ordinary citizens that coercive government is dangerous wherever it exists. No longer does a Cold War mentality successfully corral national populations into an East versus West, or us versus them, cognitive prison. Western governments that conveniently partition the world into democracies and autocracies betrayed their own distinction when they imposed COVID policies as brutally stringent as those of any communist dictatorship. No longer do our puppeteers successfully divide us into two opposing camps, one fighting unrestrained government power and the other fighting unrestrained corporate power. The illusion of self-government has been shattered, and a broader public appreciation has taken hold that recognizes the convergence of financial and political interests at the expense of democratic principles and human rights. No longer are those most eager to profit from the death and destruction of war capable of flipping a switch to turn patriotic citizens into willing sacrifices for a ruling class that never seems to have common people's best interests in mind. Decades of costly wars with questionable strategic aims, battlefield betrayals, the moral ambiguity of occupying foreign lands, resettling of millions of foreigners into our homelands, you know, or allowing the invaders to pour in. Let me, you know, just add that. And the constantly shifting definition of which nation, group, or tribe is now the enemy have all produced much more discerning civilians unwilling to die for Bill Kristol's, Hillary Clinton's, Nikki Haley's, or Liz Cheney's next call to arms. The U.S. and other Western governments know this to be true. It is why the United Kingdom new Online Safety Act criminalizes the publishing of false information, unless that false information is coming from mainstream media corporations. It is why the European Union's Digital Services Act seeks to stifle public debate on social media platforms. It is why the U.S. Senate is pushing through legislation ostensibly meant to protect children from online threats and to protect adults from the dangers of Chinese propaganda that will nonetheless be used to censor politically incorrect and unwoke points of view from the Internet. It is why the Biden administration is funding AI research programs. When, you know who's setting that up, don't you? Old Barry himself, you know, Barack, Hussein Obama. That's right. Yes, we can. I just had to. Couldn't help it. Couldn't help myself. That can be used to seek and destroy government-defined misinformation. This is why the White House successfully pressured Amazon to suppress the sale of disfavored books, and it is why political figures across the West had a conniption fit when they discovered that Tucker Carlson was conducting a journalistic interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Such is the state of free speech in the West that a panoply of petty tyrants representing America, the UK, and continental Europe all called for Carlson to face severe punishment for having the temerity to engage in unsanctioned journalism. The blurry line between democracies and autocracies has vanished. This should not have to be said, but no society can be described as free unless that society can engage in free speech. Likewise, there can be no free speech unless the public is free to criticize and disagree with the government. Any government that claims a monopoly to determine what is true is a government hostile to dissent, debate, and democratic self-rule. Western governments have so betrayed their duties to act as custodians of enlightenment, inspired human rights, they have become a tyrannical as tyrants against whom they posture. They are now little more than a collection of feudal lords using the trappings of their offices to enrich an insular ruling class while impoverishing and diminishing the masses. Through a lot of unnecessary pain and discomfort, national populations have discovered this hard truth for themselves. Green energy, induced inflation, has cut a hole in every single struggling citizen's pocket, while green energy-inspired regulations have devastated the livelihoods of many, of every worker. Green energy zealots have targeted Western farmers, miners, laborers, and machinists for cancellation. The World Economic Forum's Green New World Order, seeks to eliminate private property, private communications, private transportation, and private transactions. The heart of human freedom is on the line, and increasingly, Western populations are concluding that Western governments and corporations deserve the blame. Well, I'm going to tell you what. What was that there? Seeks to eliminate private property, private communications, private transportation, and private transactions. Well, you know who has a, or who signed an executive order to put all of that right there in place? You're correct. None other than Barack Hussein Obama. Around 2012 or 13, I believe, if I am not mistaken. Let's keep rolling here. I've got a few things I want. I mean, I've got quite a bit I want to get through. And by goodness, Lord willing, I'm going to be able to accomplish this. America is undergoing genocide. This is a write-up by Paul Craig Roberts. It's not a conspiracy theory that the 300,000 immigrant invaders, will be in the official account, entering the U.S. unopposed each month are recruits organized by NGOs and not refugees from political persecution. The NGOs that are underwriting the invasion provides maps of the routes along with food and shelter are provided. Roads and bridges are being constructed to aid the invasion. One of the NGOs is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, or HIAS, of which the current director of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, himself a Jew, was a board member until December of 2020. According to an article on Substack, HIAS has received $100 million from the U.S. government in the past 3 years. I guess that was this here, Border Invasion, DHS, and DOJR. It's another link to another article. Mayorkas is foreign-born and himself an immigrant invader, yet he is the director of Homeland Security for the United States. Well, I mean, he was impeached in the Senate. Now it has to go to the House. That was that would be another breaking story over this past week, right? On January 31st, the House Committee on Homeland Security voted to approve articles of impeachment of Mayorkas for willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law in enforcing border policy and breach of public trust. There has been no investigation of whether it was Mayorkas who gave the $100 million or U.S. taxpayers' money of U.S. taxpayers' money to a Jewish NGO engaged in the organized invasion of the United States. I'm going to tell you what, a place where a lot of these NGOs are set up is right down there in Panama. And guess who's running those? Those would be the Chinese. If you think I'm lying, you'll eventually, if you think I'm just feeding you a string, man, you better go do some research. So I'm going to tell you what, I've done my research, and I know who to listen to and who not to listen to. And I can trust my own intuition. Another problem is, I don't want to skip too far ahead. According to the report on Substack, HIAS has a processing center in the Darien Gap used to collect the immigrant invaders and to send them on their guided and provisioned way. Apparently, Mayorkas is aware of this and possibly is helping to finance it. But don't expect Congress to investigate anything that might reflect unfavorably on a Jewish organization. Another problem in Vinita Gupta, daughter of Indian immigrants, who is Associate Attorney General of the U.S., Gupta has been active in investigating police departments and enforcing LGBTQ2 rights and hate crime prosecutions and winning settlements for illegal immigrant children. I mean, so are you aware America is undergoing a genocide? Her father is a director of Avantor, a company that makes in Mexico acetic anhydride, a product used in producing heroin and methamphetamine. As the Democrats' open border policy facilitates the drug trade, the question is whether an associate attorney general who fights the immigrant invaders and whose father is involved in a corporation that produces a product used in the drug trade has a conflict of interest. Well, I mean, I'd say so, wouldn't you? Governments in a Tower of Babel is problematic, especially when the most recent citizens are people of color with racial privileges that give them the preferred entry into top positions. Well, right, was that like a tranny? Is like the head of the Navy or whatever the hell you want to call it? And it's complete. And it, yes, I said it, and I don't give a, you know, it is out of its ever-living mind. Thank you. And look at that, I lost my place. Many of the immigrant invaders arrive from countries in which it is commonplace that officials privatize their offices for money or for ideological and social agendas. When a Western government has so many government officials from countries outside the Western tradition, how does the country remain Western? Isn't it transformed into something else? Well, I mean, Tucker told you at the very beginning. With the collapse of the integrity of Western public and private institutions, third world behavior has become characteristic of U.S. officials. Danny Willis, the Fulton County District Attorney, and Letitia James are examples. Well, that Willis character, she's gotten herself involved in all kinds of corruption, haven't you come to find? I would imagine Letitia James isn't too far behind. Under the Democrats, each and every month, illegal immigrants are permitted to enter the U.S. in numbers. Official, the real number might be higher, equal to the population of Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania. Think about it. Every year, the Democrats' open border policy saddles us with 12 cities the size of Pittsburgh full of third world immigrants who know nothing of Western ways. It is a new form of genocide that America is undergoing. It is unclear to me if there is enough of America left to be able to rescue itself. Rescue has certainly been possible as long as gullible, insouciant, hapless Americans continue to vote Democrat. Not that the Republicans are much different. As far as I can tell, the only difference between the two parties is that Republicans do not hate white people, and it is not their policy to destroy them and to replace a white country with people of color. The Republicans lack a fighting spirit. They themselves are part of the establishment. Well, what was that at the beginning there, Fagan? Talking about how all these people are bought and paid for and owned, you know, generally through blackmail. And where does that blackmail lead us? Oh, that's right. Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein, and the Israeli Mossad. Right? Right. Yeah. But just as nothing will be done about the genocide of the Palestinians, nothing will be done about the American genocide. White people are an endangered species. Their governments are conspiring against them. Well, if you haven't noticed, all the warring factions across the face of the planet right now, the vast majority of them are white or Caucasian. Illegals Nation, a great replacement beginning to unfold. Up until now, I'd always thought that the great replacement theory to remove the current Western electorate and replace them with third world illegal migrants was some nutty fringe right conspiracy theory. Oh yeah, boy, it sure was, wasn't it? Not now. Pretty damn real, isn't it? The idea has been roundly denounced by the establishment as racist. Yes, racist, racist, racist. I mean, isn't that the same thing as Russia, Russia, Russia? Yeah, racist, 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 Russia, Russia, Russia. Although the French novelist who invented the theory in 2011, renowned Camus, insisted that his theory was about civilizational values, not skin color. These days, based on how the migrant crisis is unfolding and a couple of developments, it's possible to wonder. See here. Immigration experts are raising the alarm about how the increasing flow of migrants illegally crossing into the U.S. may significantly impact states' representation in the House of Representatives and the Electoral College. Well, you don't say. Well, I mean, this is the Democrats' voting force, okay? Make absolutely no mistake about it whatsoever. Whatsoever. Okay? Shortly after taking office in January of 2021, President Biden signed an executive order requiring that the U.S. Census Bureau factor in all residents, including non-citizens, as part of its decennial calculation of the U.S. population. As a result, the appointment of House seats and, therefore, electoral votes for presidential elections can be swayed as migrants continue to pour over the southern border. You know, and like I said, I don't give a shit who you're writing for or what publication you're, you know, publicizing or whatever. You know, we got to stop using this stupid term migrants, okay? Because that's not what these people are. And I'm going to prove it to you here in due time here, you know, if time permits me and allowed to be do so. If I can get through everything in due time, in other words. Illegal immigration, yeah. The invaders, well, has all kinds of effects, and among them is that it distorts the mechanics of demographic government. Folks, I want you to understand, this is 21st century warfare, and it's war by demograph. Among them is that it distorts the mechanics of demographic government. Mark Kerkorian, the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, told Fox News Digital in an interview, illegal immigrants aren't even supposed to be here, so their inclusion in the census count for purposes of appointment really is outrageous. Well, you think? There are a lot of close votes in Congress, more than there used to be, so it can, in fact, make a difference. Kerkorian said, it shouldn't be a question of does this give you personally more influence in Washington. The question should be, is it right? Is it healthy for our democratic process to be distorted this way? The answer is no. Well, of course it's no. Overall, according to the Federation for American Immigration Reform, there are an estimated 16.8 million illegal immigrants living in the U.S. as of June of 2023. Therefore, because every House seat represents 761,168 residents on average, the total number of illegal immigrants account for roughly 22 seats in the House. Much of the concern about the open borders up until now has been about illegal immigrants voting in U.S. elections, which has power line as noted. Says here is already happening in California. However, based on this information, all they need to do is be illegally present, not vote. Voting, in fact, is unimportant because entire congressional seats will be allocated based on their presence alone. All a Democrat needs in such a scenario is a few voters than the other guy, with the great mass of those living in the district inert. It's more convenient for Democrats that way to have a non-voting electorate, but the full power of congressional seat remains the same as if they had a full-throated voter mandate. These are what election watchers in California call dead districts, where very low numbers of those living there vote, owing to the fact that so many of them cannot vote. Many politicians around Los Angeles, supposed to be the land of the angels, I would strongly differ with that with that being the case. Illegals' heavy voting district wield tremendous power on this arrangement, yet don't need to rely on the consent of the people in the least. As if that isn't destructive enough, the democracy itself, as the Fox News reports, commentators argue, there's also this from Steve Camarota of the Center for Immigration Studies, published in the New York Post yesterday. We keep hearing the U.S. economy is strong, especially the job market. At first glance, this perspective seems to be spot on. Compared to the fourth quarter of 19, with before COVID-19 hit, the fourth quarter of 23 shows 2.7 million more people working. Except all those gains are among, well, the invaders. You know, I have to change the words. I have to continue to change the words, because people just aren't smart enough to get the facts of what's really happening. Or, like Fagan said, you know, all the media is bought out and paid for and owned by the governments themselves. And we've come to understand that that's the fact. Put simply, compared to 2019, all the job growth has gone to immigrants. Yeah. To be clear, employment for both groups has rebounded significantly since the depths of the COVID-19 recession in 2020. But the number of U.S.-born workers has not returned to the level it was before the pandemic, while immigrant employment, legal and illegal, together has ballooned. How do we know this? The government collects the Current Population Survey, or CPS, each month specifically to measure employment. It asks people where they were born and if they are U.S. citizens. The figures don't distinguish between illegal and illegal immigrants, but the chief victims, he notes, are native-born workers who are non-college-educated men who are not being hired, while illegals almost certainly are being hired instead. Well, I mean, what is it? Cheaper labor, right? That's how it was in Southeast Iowa for the longest of time. I said, I think I mentioned it last week, and maybe I'm not. I may have mentioned it before. Dad was saying chief deputy for 8 years of his 30-year career, and he called ICE in the mid-1990s and said, hey, man, you get me a bunch of buses up here, and I'll load every single one of them, and you can send them back across the southern border. You think there was ever any calls back or ever response to sending any buses? No, hell no, absolutely not. You know, and the vast majority of these people where they work are in food production facilities. I mean, that alone should scare the ever-living hell out of any of you listening to this broadcast. So you're casting their numbers of workers out of the economic system is outrageous, almost the same as casting them out of the country or out of the voting bloc. It's pretty consigning these workers to slavery, to the welfare state, a life of zero autonomy as illegals power forward economically and use that power eventually politically. As a different guy named Camus once said, without work, all life goes rotten. Trends like this suggest that Democrats are seeking to replace the electorate by any means necessary, and they've already begun. Bringing in foreigners to replace stubbornly unsocialist Americans seems to be pretty effective in unfolding a plan to promote the destruction of America itself as an idea. Self-destruct. Get this. Well, I hope you're sitting down. The U.S. has granted the United Nations $1.3 billion in 2023 to aid illegals invading America. United States taxpayers are being milked of money that the United Nations or the UN and other agencies are spending to aid illegals in crossing the U.S. borders. Based on available government spending data, more than $1 billion in funding from the government has been granted to agencies assisting, in quotations, I'm going to put it, migrants, you know. And to change the word utterly, you know, it's invaders. We are actually funding our own border crises. Todd Bensman, a senior national security fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies, an anti-mass migration think tank, and it's provided by, ultimately, the United States taxpayer. Before President Joe Biden's term as president, America shelled out around $500 million per year to the UN's main migration arm. You know, and that probably helped, you know, invade the vast majority of you know, Western Europe for migration. IOM. Was the International Organization for Migration, the IOM. But beginning in the Biden administration, the funding skyrocketed to nearly $1.3 billion in 2023. This amount is more than double what it had been under former President Donald Trump's administration, as per USAspending.gov. As per government spending data, most of the money comes from the Department of State and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, you said. A total of $547 million over 2 years ending in 2023 has also been voluntarily contributed to IOM from the population, refugees and migration, which is under the State Department. Moreover, well, I mean, what is it? I mean, we've got to pass the bills to know what's in them. Right, Pelosi? Right, Nancy? Right? Sorry, let me regain my composure here. Moreover, the UN's Regional Refugee and Migrant Response Plan update for 2024 is requesting $1.6 billion to be distributed to 17 Latin American and Caribbean countries. Well, of course, why not? You know, and how many shell companies are down there? You know, I mean, folks, what you are looking at in this modern day and age and what's happening to our country right now, this is the biggest bank job known to mankind. Okay? That is a fact. That there is literally the unequivocal truth. Yes, U.S. grants has been allocated to $372 million in cash and vouchers and multi-purpose cash assistance during 2024 for 624,300 migrants in Central and South America who are headed for the U.S. border. Yep, just put it on their cards. Migrants also directly receive cash, or what the U.N. Emergency Manual calls cash in envelopes. And they know that the U.S. border is wide open. According to the U.S. southern border, in addition to 1.7 million known gotaways since Biden took office, they say, well, you know, We're coming now because Biden's letting us in, Benzman said. Benzman, who has been on the forefront of investigating the causes of the migration surge, found that IOM and the other non-governmental organizations or NGOs helping migrants make the dangerous trek from South and Central America. Workers at the IOM migrant camp in Reynosa, Mexico in 2021 told him that the families of four were receiving about $800 per month on a debit card. You get that, folks? $800 per month on a debit card. How is that $700 to you folks over there in Maui? You know, that one-time payment. But, you know, let's continue here. His viral post on X noted long lines of migrants waiting to receive the cards. Republicans proposed bill to defund UN's illegal immigration operations. Even sanctuary city mayors have been crying for help and admitting that their local government funding and services are at a breaking point due to the worsening migrant crisis at the United States border. Because of this, the GOP lawmakers took the liberty to reintroduce legislation that would eliminate UN migrant funding. House Resolution Bill 6166, the tax dollars for the UN's Immigration Invasion Act, would prohibit contributors to the IOM and the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, as well as the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. Moreover, the bill said the said bill requires the Government Accountability Office, or the GAO, to conduct an audit of the federal funding previously appropriated to UN agencies that have financed the migrant crisis to force repayment of that funding to the U.S. Treasury. UN agencies are financing the ongoing U.S. border crisis, Representative Lance Gooden, Republican of Texas, said in a January 26 statement. The United Nations is using our own tax dollars against us, and U.S. policymakers can no longer stand by while elites in the UN at Davos actively finance an invasion of our sovereign territory. It's time to say enough and cut off funding to these corrupt globalist institutions until respect for our territorial integrity and appreciation for our generosity is restored. Well, I say just disband the UN in its entirety, right? Didn't you learn anything from Fagan, the speech at the beginning of the broadcast, right? CFR, Trilateral Commission, the UN, and now we've got, the World Economic Forum, right? Right. Some headlines here. I'm going to go through a couple of headlines. I mean, I would like to read the whole thing, but I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, I've got time, I believe. No, I'll just run with it. Why not? Mexico is a living example of what befalls a nation when it allows corruption to run rampant and fails to crack down on crime. The effect cartel violence has on the lives of Mexicans is now common knowledge. For many in the Latin American nation, there is always a lingering fear, a walking on eggshells to avoid running afoul of deadly organized crime. The average Mexican citizen understands that. Should he rub the local narcos the wrong way and incur their displeasure, he can expect little to no help from the authorities and can do just as little to defend himself. After all, firearms are virtually unobtainable for most law-abiding Mexicans. But violence from organized crime also has a damaging effect on Mexico's economy, interrupting the flow of key sectors and industries and thus keeping the nation from prospering. Well, basically what this is going to get at in the long run of it, because I want to get some other things, crime shutting down Mexico's economy should serve as a warning to the United States. Well, I'd say, has anybody seen any of these, smash and grabs or just these mobs and throngs of people raiding whatever store it may be, from a Walmart to a Target to, anywhere in between? Yeah. That's why I was going to bring it up. That's why I guess I just mentioned it. It was just to be mentioned. The federal mega debt is here to stay. U.S. fiscal realities are well known. Total federal debt outstanding has now reached $34 trillion, up from the $98 billion in 1981, $5.67 trillion in 2000, $13.56 trillion in 2010, $26.95 trillion in 2020, and at 120% of the U.S. economy's productive capacity, gross domestic product, the federal debt matches that at the end of World War II. That, $34 trillion when spelled out is the number 34 followed by 12. Yes, count them. 12 zeros separated by four commas. So it looks like this. A lot of digits and commas for the human brain to comprehend. Yeah, man. Like I said, what they've done and they continue to do, and everybody's like, well, you always speak in these parables of they. Well, I mean, need you see or look any further than what's going on? We're in bad shape, folks. Bad, bad shape. And I don't want to call this the death of our nation. I don't want to say that. I don't want to allow that to happen. And I'm hoping and praying that there's plenty of, you know, like I said, true, dyed-in-the-wool, red-blooded, God-fearing Christian Americans that are going to retake this country. You know, I've spent the past, 10, 11, 12, 13, some odd years trying to do my best to wake the masses as efficiently as I can. And I think to a vast majority I've failed. But I know to a certain extent I was successful. And I'll continue to be successful. Because I'm going to, you know, like I said, look, it's the unequivocal truth. And the whole reason we're in the position we're in is because, guess what? We've been lied to the whole time. Lied to the whole time. Well, I think it's time for the American people to start to set things straight, don't you? I think it's time that we put a president in office again that will turn everything around to the best of his ability, stop at least one or two of these wars within 24 hours, and begin the biggest deportation campaign ever known to mankind. To take place right here in these United States. And on the backside of all of it, all of these people have committed high crimes of treason, sedition, subterfuge. Guess what? There's laws on the books for that kind of thing. And a lot of them are quite stringent. And quite stretching, might I add. You know, neck, rope, stretching, hanging unto death for treason. Like I said, I've got some things here that I would love to be able to get through, but they're just going to be read off as headlines, right? State Department threatens Congress over censorship program. Yep. This here. Does anybody remember that shooting that took place there in Fargo, South Dakota, with the terrorist with the body armor, and he had the hand grenades, and he killed two police officers? Well, guess what? Yep, the terrorists are in the country. And they don't want anybody to mention anything about it. And you know how hard it was for me to find this story? It was next to impossible. But yeah. Body camera video shows how Fargo officer ended shooter's rampage on police. And what was the guy's name here? What was the guy's name? Gunman. Where is it at? Here we are. The shooting killed 23-year-old officer Jake Wallen and injured his colleagues. Colleagues 22-year-old Tyler Hawes and 28-year-old Andrew Dotis. Here we are. Barakat also shot Carly Coswick, a Boston area woman. I mean, this was a terrorist attack. And, well, I mean, guess what? I mean, you know, just you know, some kind of an off-wall conspiracy theory, right? A person with a, you know, a Muslim name, and it was proved that he was in the country illegally, you know, just opens fire on a bunch of police officers and citizens with an AK-47. And thank God for the one officer who was able to maintain his composure and literally take the guy down with a sidearm. Totally outgunned, and he still accomplished to disable the threat. Here's this, another story. Minnesota man charged with aiding ISIS threatened to blow up New York, according to the DOJ. And this guy's name, get this, Harafa Hussein Abdi, 41, a U.S. citizen from Minnesota. How'd he get his green card, I'd like to ask. He probably doesn't have one. He was given amnesty, right? Let's see here, what is this? Oh, that's right. UK judge, remember I reported on a hacking death over there in the United Kingdom? And there were three, four, UK judge says four suspects played video of brutal machete killing of 16-year-old victim at a party. And guess what? These bastards are going to probably, hopefully, be dealt with, by the English judicial system, and will never see the light of day forever. And when I say forever, I mean forever. But that's the thing that they were, look, we've had it happen here, right? Remember the guy that beheaded his girlfriend? Here's a video. This is what Democrats want on an ongoing flow of Chinese and Middle Eastern men unleashed on America. I'll put all these in the chat log over there at Element after the end of the broadcast, because we are racing right up on the very end of the broadcast. And the stuff on the post, like I said, I believe it is extremely, extremely important. And then one of the last but not least right here, U.S. border station wide open with no custom officers checking Mexican traffic, and trucks, vehicles are flooding in at rates you can't even begin to even imagine. And you'll see it over there on Element at the end of this broadcast. Folks, I want to thank you for tuning in this evening to the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1. This has been me, your host, John Wayne, and it is he who is signing off for tonight. God bless and Godspeed.
Yeah.
Revolution.radio, freedomslips.com.
Natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised.
Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement. Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom.